Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thanks for joining us for this session. I'm excited to present on this. It's a study on training to practice on an evidence-based practice called the Critical Time Intervention Model. So this is an implementation research study. I'm Neil Green, and I'm going to be presenting with Rachel Kenny, my colleague here. She's going to share the microphone with me. I'll pass it over to her in a little while. We're both here from the Center for Social Innovation, and C4 is a small business that aims to improve the lives of vulnerable people by translating research into practice. I do want to first say that we don't have any relationships to disclose or any financial disclosures, other than we want to acknowledge our funder, the National Institute of Mental Health. This was funded as a small business innovation research grant, and I'd also like to acknowledge our PI, our principal investigator, Jeff Olivette, and just say that this project was really the result of a collaboration between our organization, C4, and Columbia University, the Mailman School of Public Health, Hunter College Silberman School of Social Work, and the Center for Urban and Community Services in New York City. So just a little bit of context to before we start. We're noticing that implementation science is a growing field, and there's been a lot of work in it lately in behavioral health and healthcare, but finding that it isn't quite moving as rapidly in homelessness services. And part of the reason for that is that there aren't as many evidence-based practices specific to preventing and ending homelessness, though there are a few. And even for those few EBPs, there is a gap that persists between research and practice. So I don't want to talk too much about what critical time intervention is, but I want to provide some context. And for folks who want to know more about it, we are happy to stay longer and talk about it. We're also happy to share our resources and networks with some of the heavyweight experts on CTI who we've collaborated with. CTI is an evidence-based practice. It's recognized by NREP, the National Registry of Evidence-Based Programs and Practices, as well as the National Coalition of Evidence-Based Policy. It was originally developed for single homeless adults with mental illness, and it's expanding its reach. It's now being adapted to be worked with other various subgroups of people experiencing homelessness, including veterans and families and youth. And another kind of cool thing about CTI is that it's now being implemented internationally. We know that it's being implemented in the Netherlands and Brazil and as far-reaching as Australia. Now, more specifically, what is CTI? It's a team-based case management approach. It's time-limited. It's a nine-month duration intervention that's focused on just a couple of patient-centered treatment goals throughout, and it's phase-based. There's three phases, each 3 months long, and the changes from very intense services down to less intense services with more connections to community supports, informal and formal supports. So the purpose of our study was it was a randomized controlled trial, and we were comparing implementation of CTI after training. And we were specifically comparing and contrasting a new online model of training of CTI and comparing it to kind of what you would normally see, a face-to-face training. We were looking at satisfaction rates. We were looking at fidelity. We were looking at implementation. We were looking at some client outcomes with administrative data. And we'll get into some of this more later. We recruited 19 homeless service organizations into the study, and I'll show the map of them in a second, totaling 179 service providers. And we randomized each organization into the online training group and the face-to-face training group, and I'll say a little bit more about what those entailed too. But first, let's look at a map. We recruited from a pretty broad geographical range, on this map, the orange is the online group, the blue is the face-to-face group, and the size of the circles is based on the size of the organization. So we had some geographical diversity. We had a range of provider-serving communities that were rural and urban, and we had one service provider actually even in Canada up there in Calgary. These are some screenshots of the online training. The online training and the face-to-face training had the same number of contact hours. They were each 24 hours. The online training was broken up into 8 weeks and included self-paced modules with live webcasts and small group discussions and an online discussion forum. The self-paced modules themselves included a kind of a case-based study and audio and video and quizzes for interactivity. The live webcasts brought everyone who was part of the training at the same time together to kind of receive information from the experts. And then it was drilled down into smaller groups working in the kind of the opposite weeks together to discuss the challenges and concerns that they had among like-minded professionals. Now the face-to-face training, again, it was the same amount of hours, 24, and was broken up into a day and a half on-site training that included presentation, didactic presentation, role-playing exercises, and case studies. And then it was followed with 3 months of telephone consultation, which turned out to be kind of a key variable, which we'll discuss in a little bit. To quickly describe our data collection process, we had a bunch of different time points. Right before the training, there was a pretest. After the training, there was a post-test. Then we collected baseline, 3 months, 6 months, and 9 months data. And we were collecting data from administrators who were running the organizations. We collected data from providers individually through surveys, and then providers as a team through interviews. And we also were collecting administrative data sets at each time point. To capture fidelity, we were using fidelity forms that were developed by our collaborators at Columbia University when they do their fidelity assessments, and we modified them a little bit for this study, but we were capturing a lot of the same elements that are usually captured in fidelity assessment. And we also did 4 site visits. So 4 of the organizations we actually went and visited and had some interviews with the administrators, the providers, and then focus groups with clients. Our hypotheses were that the online training and the face-to-face training would have similar results in both implementation and fidelity and outcomes to clients. And now at this point, I'm going to hand it over to Rachel to talk about kind of the exciting part, the findings.
Thanks, Neil. So at the Center for Social Innovation, we focus a lot on training. And so we're really kind of curious about the impacts of these trainings on the service providers and then also the people who receive the services, the clients. One of the first things we found, which was particularly interesting, is that while the face-to-face training received higher ratings in terms of training satisfaction, the confidence that the service providers would be able to implement CTI didn't vary very much between those who received the face-to-face training and those who received the online training. In addition, the knowledge retention was pretty similar between the two of them, with the online training actually having slightly higher knowledge retention, even though the face-to-face folks got follow-up consultation for quite some time after their training. So what this is kind of telling us is that, you know, people are still prefer the face-to-face training, and the online training was pretty interactive. It wasn't just a PowerPoint that people clicked through. There were a lot of interactive components to it. People still didn't like it as much as the face-to-face training, but they didn't necessarily learn anything less. Another one of our findings here is in terms of the implementation and the fidelity. And so these are two on two different kind of scales, so we shouldn't have put them in the same chart. But basically what we're trying to say is that of the agencies that implemented, there were 17 out of the 19 agencies that actually implemented. So all of the face-to-face agencies implemented CTI by the conclusion of the study. Seven of the nine online agencies had implemented. And the two agencies that didn't implement CTI, one of them didn't implement because they didn't have the funding available to support the caseworkers and the structure of the program. And the other one didn't implement because they weren't able to identify housing resources in their community. And that's really key to CTI, is that it's about critical time intervention, taking someone from homelessness and getting them into housing, and this particular transition, assisting them with the transition. And so if there's nothing to transition them to, then they couldn't implement CTI. But overall, 17 out of the 19 implemented, which was really exciting. In terms of their fidelity, we had a really interesting way of measuring fidelity. There are a number of forms that agencies use when they're implementing CTI. They track things like which people the caseworkers talk about when they have their meetings. They track what the goals of people are. And these are forms that are just part of CTI. And so we were able to take these forms that the agencies were going to use anyway and worked with, mostly with Sally Conover, to come up with a fidelity scale where we took the information from the forms to come up with the fidelity scores. So all that to say, the fidelity range was about 60% for both of the face-to-face and the online groups. And we measured that fidelity at three different points in the study. So all that to say, the fidelity range was like agencies started off with really high fidelity to the model and then kind of slacked off a little bit as it went further. Or it also wasn't like they kind of started off with low fidelity and then got better. It was pretty consistent. So one of the other interesting things with fidelity was that we also had a readiness score, which I don't have a slide on, but I'm happy to share information if people are interested. And at the beginning and the conclusion of the study, we asked people questions about the agency's structure to see how ready, per se, they were to implement CTI. Because some of the things that agencies should have in place if they're going to implement CTI are things like the ability for caseworkers to be working in the field and not requiring clients to come in, because CTI is about being out in the field with people. Another one of the readiness questions was whether there were staff available to be the clinical supervisor, because clinical supervision plays a large role in CTI. And safety protocols was another thing that we were asking about. And overall, the face-to-face and online groups were similarly ready, but these readiness scores actually didn't end up being correlated with the fidelity to the model, which was kind of interesting, is that agencies may not seem like they're ready to implement CTI, but if they want to make this happen, they can find a way to make it work. And I think that's one of the really important things to remember, is that homeless service providers are so diverse, and they take these best practices and then have to find a way to make it work for them. And sometimes that doesn't mean perfect fidelity, but as you'll see soon, even though there's not perfect fidelity, you still can have a positive impact. So that positive impact that we were really able to look at in this study was the impact on clients' housing status. So at the beginning of our study, about 80% or more of the clients were literally homeless, either living on the streets or in emergency shelter. And by the conclusion of the study, it was 20% or less that were literally homeless. So that was really exciting for us to see that CTI was working. And then also can see that, I mean, there was the online group started with a little bit more people who were homeless and ended with a little bit fewer people who were literally homeless. But overall, it's pretty much the same. I don't believe it was statistically significant. It's pretty much the same drop, which was really exciting to see. But one of the things I think is particularly interesting is how we got this data. We weren't collecting information directly from the clients. We were working with the service providers. And so we needed to get administrative data from them on the clients, on their housing status, And then we also got administrative data on demographics as well as their mental illness diagnoses and substance use diagnoses. But that was challenging because we had 19 agencies with 19 different data collection systems and 19 different sets of questions that they were asking. So what we did was, at the beginning of the study, we thought about what the data elements were that we wanted to collect, and then kind of sent out a questionnaire to the agencies to ask them how they were collecting that information already. And then when we got that back, we used that information to design how we were going to collect the data. And we created a spreadsheet that the agencies filled in at three different time points with all of the clients who were getting CTI services. And of the 19 agencies, 18 of them sent those spreadsheets back relatively quickly in a way that was really easy for us to clean. It wasn't complicated for them at all. And one of the agencies had kind of a different data system that we had to do a lot of cleaning with, but we were still able to take their data and get it to fit in with the others and be really usable and useful for us. And then, of course, with where we're coming from, we're really interested in the cost of this for agencies. Obviously, in the current economic climate, cost is incredibly important for training. And what we found was that the face-to-face training was about three times more expensive than the online training. And that's obvious for a variety of reasons. I mean, there's the travel time for the presenters. When you do online training, you can have multiple agencies at once, so that kind of brings the cost down. So even though the initial development might be really expensive, it gets kind of spread across multiple agencies and makes it more affordable. So to kind of sum up what we found out, the satisfaction, like I said, was higher in the face-to-face group, but that wasn't necessarily reflected in the knowledge gains of the service providers who got the training. The implementation was pretty similar between the two groups, as well as the fidelity scores. And both of the groups had dramatically improved client outcomes in terms of their housing status. We weren't able to get in much more detail than that in terms of mental health status or anything, because there was just such variety in how agencies were collecting the data, and we weren't funding them to do CTI. These were agencies that self-selected to do CTI, so we really didn't have any way that we could go in and say, you know, we want you to start collecting this data in this way. It just that wasn't a position that we were in. And then also that the online training was significantly less expensive to administer than the face-to-face. So some of the implications that we're thinking about is blending the online and face-to-face training. Even if the face-to-face folks aren't having better outcomes, if they're happier with their training, that's telling us something. And so we've been thinking about the importance of integrating the follow-up consultation with online training. It's a possible way to kind of marry the two. Continuing to support CTI, I mean, our study continues to find that CTI has a positive impact on clients. We weren't able to follow them as long as in other studies, but there's been a lot of research on CTI that's really promising. And then, of course, we're interested in conducting more research to understand EBPs and how they play out in programs. One of the particularly interesting things to talk to the agencies about was the different ways that they modified. Some of them had CTI last longer, some of them had CTI end sooner, some of them didn't have supervisors. There are all kinds of modifications that are happening, and we don't really know the implications of all of these at this point for CTI and then for other EBPs as well. So if you download our slides, there's obviously a lot of references on there that you can check out. And then we wanted to point you to some resources on CTI if you're interested. Criticaltime.org is a website that has a lot of information about CTI, and Dan Herman, who kind of is the grandfather of CTI, put that together. Think T3 is associated with the Center for Social Innovation. That's kind of what our training arm is called. And then CUCS is the Center for Urban Community Services, and they were our partner who implemented the face-to-face training component. So we're really excited to be sharing all this information with you today, and as we move forward, the CTI study has been completed, and we're not currently doing more work on that particular study, but we have a few other small business innovative research grants going. One of them we talked about last year about a motivational interviewing simulator that Kathleen in the back of the room is a part of, and that hopefully is going to be getting funding for phase two relatively soon. And as well as that, we're working with Yale to create an online version of their recovery roadmap tool, which is on person-centered recovery planning. And so we're always looking for new ways to translate existing face-to-face kind of static training into something that's online and more interactive. So if anyone has ideas about trainings that need to get out there, we would love to hear more about that. But that's all I have. If you want to turn it over to questions, or
sure, go ahead. Field a couple questions.
And I don't hear very well. If you don't mind speaking up.
Sure. I apologize if I missed this at the beginning, but I'm just wondering, can you say more about the service providers you worked with? What kind of service providers were there?
What kind of service providers?
Yeah.
There were a variety of different agencies involved. They were all doing homeless services. Some of them were working specifically with families, and some were working with specifically people who have HIV. I have a lot of data on that. I can show you if you're interested in terms of the breakdown. I mean, I think it was generally representative of homeless service providers in general in terms of more female than male. I think the majority were Caucasian. But is there something more specific you were interested about?
I guess I was wondering, with the housing outcome, if any of the providers were also providing housing, or if they had relationships with housing programs?
Yeah, some of them did, and then others had to kind of develop those relationships as the study went on. And I think that was a big part of why one of them ultimately wasn't able to implement, and why another one waited so long to implement, is because they couldn't identify those housing resources. So if an agency is interested in implementing CTI, that's something that you might want to do legwork on before you get training. So once you get training, you can jump right in and get going rather than spending time figuring out how to get the housing, because that is a real barrier in a lot of communities. Thank you.
Thank you.